27th edition of the Business and Economic Development Committee. Chairman Metzger is in his district on legislative business, and so we're going to hold these public hearings this afternoon, and I'm sure Chairman Metzger will get caught up to speed on these issues when he returns. We're going to open a public hearing on all the bills all at once and pull folks up so that they don't have to come up back and forth on in each of the bills. The sign-up sheets are pretty much identical on all the bills. You can come up and talk to each of the bills in order and let us know on the issues that you have with each of the bills. We're going to start off with some testimony from Senator Nelson. So at this point, I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 13, Senate Bill 14, Senate Bill 15, Senate Bill 16, and Senate Bill 17. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is David Nelson. I represent the Northeast portion of Eastern Oregon, Senate District 29, four counties. You have these series of six bills here, seven bills, I guess, actually. Six bills here. We heard Senate Bill 11 in Senator Decker's committee this morning, so he's going to hear the spiel again or something from all this. Some history here. In front of us is the old map in 1999 of the telecommunications system in Oregon. It's all straight lines. We were pretty antiquated, had some interruption of service. We were just kind of stumbling along. Well, in 1999, we passed Senate Bill 622, and many of the players are in this room that were involved with that, and so they're pretty much aware of what's going on. I had James hand out this map to you. The top part is the map of Senate Bill 622, the interconnecting rings that it developed as a result of that legislation. You'll notice it didn't cover the entire state. But there is got most of the population areas. The bottom map is just an example of what has happened since that time. This is a NOAANet map, and it's filled in the ring down around Coos Bay in that area. And there are several other groups out there that are actually building the telecommunications. So the end result is what Oregon has is probably the state of the art. We're probably the leaders in the country in having a connected infrastructure system with redundancy and connecting rings, and so we have high speed, high width bandwidth. We've got everything we really need. We've got a lot of good infrastructure in place. So that brings us to actually what Senate Bill 622 did, and it created this ring and started this whole process. What it didn't do was get to the last mile, connecting everybody. And so this is these set of bills are really a outgrowth of that whole entire concept. Is how do you get to that point? In the last session, we passed House Bill 2577, which basically stated, as in general terms, as policy of the state of Oregon, that we shall have and develop the broadband to the greatest extent possible. And it also created the Oregon Telecommunication Coordinating Council, ORTCC. Their charge was to study and to report back. I chaired the interim technology committee in this last session, and at the end of in November, they came back to our committee with this recommendation, and this is the series of bills that you have in front of you, from 12 to 17, and from 12 to 16, and also Senate Bill 11, which you heard Reverend this morning. Senate Bill 17 is a study request for a task force. Actually, Lee Vire, who is commissioner of the PUC, came to me and said, well, he thought that there was some real need for that because telecommunications is changing so quickly. There's some federal issues involved. He recommended to me that we didn't do anything this session, try and figure out anything this session. Let the Fed sort of settle out and figure out what they're doing, and then perhaps the Oregon PUC could come forth. But they, his bill, and there's a proposed amendment to that bill, or my bill, or whoever's bill it is, Senate Bill 17 anyway, there is a proposed amendment to that also that would designate, I think, changing some of the membership, actually reducing the legislature's membership and adding some parties that he felt would be important. So the Telecom Coordinating Council is made up of a group of several people statewide. It has done an excellent job. There are some folks that I think, what are they doing there? And that's basically the telecom companies don't like them. because they don't have any real monetary interest in this. What their charge was, study the telecommunications issue in the state of Oregon and make recommendations back. How can we improve it? So that's what the sum total of all these bills are. These are their recommendations. Now, as you as a committee member, some of them are going to be fairly controversial. You'll understand that. There's Universal Service Fund, I think, in 14 or 16, one of those. There's just some issues there that you're going to have to be looking at. What I think this council is trying to do is building off what we did in 622. It is basically a creation of a public-private partnership. If you remember in 622, what we did was in exchange for some regulatory changes, going from a regulatory system, regulatory rate system, to a price cap system, which some companies potentially could have found interesting or profitable to them. They had the opportunity to come in. We didn't mandate anybody came in, and it really subjected four companies. It was Quest, Verizon, Sprint, and CenturyTel. Those are the four companies that it really applied to, because they were what they called the providers. Of the four, only Quest or US West at the time provided in. They came up with $120 million that basically built this system and changed us from this archaic thing that we have in front of us to those maps that you have there. So I think they're to be commended for that. I think the end result is it is a success story. I think that this coordinating council is a broad spectrum of people from throughout the state of Oregon. They represent many interests. There's Republicans, there's Democrats, they're actually a pretty salty group of people, basically. They argue a lot amongst themselves, but they really try to come down to what is really best for Oregon. And so with that, I'm going to get off here so you guys can listen to their detail, and unless there's some questions you want to ask of me. But I'm not the detail person. I understand that. We'll get right down to the nitty gritty of how these things are going to work. I think you should talk with these other members, and however the chair wants to do it. I'd be willing to answer any questions.
Any questions for Senator Nelson?
Senator Jeffords heard the spiel so many times. He could answer that. He could probably give it himself.
We could do an ask and answer.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Nelson, for your time.
I'm going to leave the proposed amendments for 17-1s up here at the desk.
Yeah, and we've got, committee members, we've got those in your packet. At this point, I'm going to have Teresa just go through each of the bills real quickly and just give a brief outline out of the staff measure summaries that she's produced. And then we'll pull up various folks for testimony. So, Teresa, do you want to just start at the...
Start at the top, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Start at 13 and work their way through those.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 13 extends the direction of House Bill 2577, which was passed during the 1999 Legislative Assembly. It directed the Public Utility Commission to report annually to the governor and to the legislature on the status of competition and regulation within the telecommunications industry. The sunset on the reports is currently June 30th, 2005. Senate Bill 13 would extend the sunset to January 2, 2008. And the bill also adds an additional report requirement, which will be analysis and planning for advanced telecommunications services, and it has an emergency clause. Senate Bill 14 allows the PUC to use universal service surcharge funds not only for its current purpose of providing basic telephone service, but also to expand it to assure that broadband services are available at a reasonable and affordable rate, and it also has an emergency clause. Senate Bill 15 extends the sunset of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council to January 2, 2010. It requires a report to the Legislative Assembly by February 1, 2009 on how to best coordinate statewide, regional, and local telecommunications services, as well as containing information on how to implement distance learning for the education and healthcare communities. Senate Bill 16 amends ORS 759.016, which outlines legislative findings on broadband services. It would require that the PUC administer laws relating to telecommunications in a manner that is consistent with the goal of promoting services and access to broadband services. And last but not least, Senate Bill 17. It creates the Task Force of Telecommunications Law Revision. The task force will be responsible for reviewing ORS Chapter 759, which is the chapter that deals with telecommunications. It also will tackle other laws governing telecommunications. The focus of the task force is to identify and correct obsolete statutes and inconsistent terminology, consolidate and clarify statutory provisions to reflect changing technology, and to make recommendations on the proper scope of the PUC's authority to regulate telecommunications. recommendations. In front of you, you do have dash one amendments, which were submitted by Senator Nelson, who worked in conjunction with the PUC. Mr. Chair, would you want me to go over these amendments now or wait till?
Sure. Let's go over these.
Okay. The dash one amendments expands the makeup of the task force, expanding it from 8 to 10 members. The governor appointing 6 members, the president of the Senate appointing 2 members, and the speaker of house appointing 2 members. It also modifies the focus of the task force, and it will still review chapter 759, but it will also look at revising the statutory provisions to reflect changing technology and making Oregon laws on telecommunications consistent with the requirements of federal law. It also changes the task force's administration form from legislative administration to the PUC as far as staffing the task force, and also sunsets the task force at the convening of the 2007 legislative session. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for that explanation. Chairman Beyer, let's let you come. You're signed up to testify on Senate Bill 17. I think that's the only bill I have your name on, but if you have comments on the other bills, but since we're in public hearing on all of them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here with you again. It's particularly a pleasure to be here talking with you about anything other than electricity or taxes.
Hey.
I have with me Phil Nygaard, who is the manager of our telecom section. His purpose is to kick me if I say something wrong or actually answer the hard questions. Mr. Chair, if I could, I think following your instruction, I just kind of walk very quickly through these different bills. We don't have a direct position on all of them, but I'll let you know that. First, I'd like to say that the Commission is very supportive of the work that the Telecom Council has done over the last few years. They were particularly helpful to us in helping us with establish the Southern Oregon Regional EAS, some of the members working on that, and in the first of what we hope are a number of regional forums, if you will, on telecom issues. We're trying to get outside of Salem, out into the area and talk about it. Our first one was last fall in LeGrand, where we had a great setting. We brought some people from various technology companies as well as the FCC out to share with folks and us perspectives on where telecom issues are going and what the state might want to do to help some of that happen. And we think that needs to continue that kind of effort. So we're very supportive of the bill that would extend the sunset on that agency and the fine work, most of which I would remind all of you is volunteer work that's been done by them. So they're a good group. The key issue I think that you're going to see in all of this is how do we adapt and make available to all Oregonians advanced telecom services, usually referred to as broadband services at different speeds. People talk about a lot about that, and you're going to see all kinds of definitions on that, but it really talks about the changing nature of the business and moving off of what the PUC originally regulated, which is just pure telephony services, to things that are capable of providing internet services, medical diagnostics, and pure old television or movies. So that's changing, and to be very frank with you, the structure of the regulatory form or format today doesn't really address all of that, and there's a collision course between federal and state policy, a lot of debate of that going on, which gets us to the last bill that I discussed. But having said that in general, let me just tell you a little bit about how we view each of these bills. The first one, Senate Bill 12, doesn't directly touch us. It increases the number of telecom enterprise zones from 4 to 10. Based on my observation, I'll just say that I think that's a good idea, and I think Senator Starr, most of that action has happened in your neck of the woods, and Senator Deckert's, and you probably are far more familiar with it than we are about that. Second one, Senate Bill 13, extends the sunset on a report that the PUC was directed to provide. We think that's a good idea. We'd have a couple of suggestions in doing that. One is that I think rather than doing it annually as we currently do, it probably makes sense now that we have some experience to make that a biennial report since its primary function is to provide policy advice to the Assembly as you meet. And it takes a lot of effort and work to put that together, so we'd suggest that. We do have a couple of concerns with the language as it's come forward from the Council, and that has to do with the definition on some of the things in there on gathering information and broadband and that. We think that we've been working with the sponsors, which is the Council, on that. I think there needs to be a clarification. And I guess what I would ask specifically when you talk about things we ought to do is if there's specific desires that take us beyond where we've been in the past, that the Assembly be fairly clear to us on what you would like the Commission to do as we put these reports together. Probably makes sense to perhaps establish a work group, and maybe that's already happening informally, but then suggest a specific amendment language to you on that. Senate Bill 14, I think the intent there is to include broadband in the Oregon Universal Service Fund. Conceptually, there's some merit to that, but I'm going to be very candid with you. We have some concerns over that in terms of, while it's permissive language, it says the Commission may include that. The reality is that we're pushing that fund pretty hard in terms of its costs on ratepayers. Essentially, what the Universal Service Fund does, both the federal and the state, and their companions there, is they essentially tax all ratepayers to subsidize the services to higher cost areas. And I think that's a noble idea. It's been working very well, but the reality of that one is if you extend it to broadband, if you have an expectation and build that expectation that we're going to go out and deliver, 10 megabit service to every ranch and farm in the state, you're talking about a big dollar amount, then the Universal Service Fund's going to jump a lot. So just add that as a word of caution as you talk about that. Senate Bill 15, as I said previously, would extend the sunset on the Oregon Telecom Council. We think that's a good idea. Senate Bill 16, it expands, what I think it does is that it takes your goal of promoting broadband throughout the state and says that the PUC will follow that in as it implements the standard telecom law, and that's Chapter 759. Good intent, but we're not exactly sure what that means. Part of the dilemma here is that the state does not, states in general, under the federal law, do not have direct control over broadband services. They've been defined by the FCC as being an interstate service subject only to FCC control. I think the intent, what the Council was trying to get there, was to encourage legislative support for and PUC encouragement of those services throughout the state, which we're very supportive of that. But I want to be, I'm a little bit sensitive to setting up false expectations, and I guess I would, as you talk with other members who support this, ask them, talk about what that would be, and if you have a clear vision in mind, we would be very, open to working with people to define that and take it forward. The last one, then, is Senate Bill 17, which creates the interim task force to review, in fact, the telecom statute 759. I believe I was talking to, I was talking to Ginny Lang one time about this, and she had mentioned that her husband, Phil Lang, the last time we totally reviewed the statute was, I think she said it was 1969. And certainly the technology has changed since then. The rules have changed in sort of a patchwork and Band-Aid fashion. And frankly, it's just time that we take a look at that. I don't think that it's something that you ought to try to do during the current session. I think it makes sense to create a task force in the interim that has some people from the industry, some people from consumer groups, and some legislators to take a good look at that. Hopefully, and when Senator Nelson and I first started talking about this, my sense was I think Congress is going to act, and I think the FCC is going to clarify things in the next year. I'm a little, not quite as hopeful now on that, but I still think we're at a time where we need to take a look and make sure that we can, to the extent we can, bring Oregon's policies on telecommunications more in line with modern-day technology and the federal law. So that's where it is. The Dash 1 amendments change that a little bit. It broadens out the membership on the council. It's actually modeled after a very successful effort that the legislature initiated in 1999 through House Bill 3615. Which created an oversight committee to review and look at PUC policy and resulted in some significantly good changes and just worked well. The other thing that it did do is it makes the PUC responsible for staffing that, so you have the knowledge base to go forward, and frankly it saves the legislative budget a little bit. So that's a very high level overview of the bills. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate it. Senator Atkinson and Senator Mosanovich.
Thank you. I have one concern as I read the package of bills. I think it's 16, but there's the issue is that kind of flared up to me is why should we increase the oversight or the regulation to the PUC of broadband? Are you saying, did I understand you to say that it is your interpretation that the FCC already treats this as an interstate? I think you said interstate communications and therefore should not be regulated by the PUC, or are you saying that this bill probably can't give you the authority?
The FCC has recently ruled that internets, or they call it data services, which they're defining as most recently as VoIP, a voice over the internet protocol, is a service that is interstate and thus is not subject to state regulation.
So even if we passed a bill that said it's now under the purview of the PUC, sorry, Mr. Chair, follow up.
No, yeah, Bill.
It wouldn't be. Is that what you're saying?
I think there's some things we can do to promote it. I don't think we can regulate it.
Okay. Well, hold on just a second, Mr. Chair. Can you tax it?
No.
Thank you.
Introduce yourself. I'm Phil Nygaard, Administrator of the Telecommunications Division at the PUC, Chair Starr and Senator Atkinson. Generally speaking, the federal government has claimed broadband service for itself. To the extent there is any regulation, there is very little in general. It's very clear that it's in the federal arena, not in the state arena. And I do believe that it is the case that even if the state legislature should decide that it would like to heavily regulate broadband services, I don't think those laws would hold up. I think there would be a preemption issue.
Thank you. That's all.
Senator Montana.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've learned a lot about broadband in the last couple of sessions, and what I have learned is, you know, the more competition we have, the lower the rates usually occur. And landline broadband is under your purview, but wireless and cable services are not under your purview. And so what I'm most concerned about is you can regulate landline, but you don't really have much jurisdiction over the wireless or cable. And therefore, to me, you're actually, in a sense, I wouldn't say punishing, because I sort of like a little bit of regulation in some of these to help control the cost. So I would like your views on, because broadband covers everything, and because broadband is absolutely necessary to the state of Oregon, and because Oregon has one of the greatest per capita computers per capita than any other state in the nation, that this is something that we Oregonians will want, but we also want a competitive society, so the rates hopefully will stay down. So I need your input on the fact that broadband isn't just landline, which you have oversight over, but it's also wireless and cable.
Senator Chair Starr, Senator Mona Sanderson, actually we don't regulate wireline broadband,
well,
per se.
You're right. But you do landline.
We regulate
only
landline.
Telephony,
telephone services,
yeah.
And that's changing, because if you were to buy your what probably we would consider phone service, the common person considered phone service, if you buy it over the cable company, or if you buy it over a power line, which no one's doing it in Oregon now, but they are in other places. Or if you buy it wireless, it's not directly regulated. We are dealing some consumer complaints on that, so that's an issue. Regulation is probably the wrong term. I think what this is getting at here is trying to find ways to encourage and promote the spread of broadband, particularly in those areas that are less dense in population where it's harder to build a business case. Certainly not a problem in a Portland or a Salem or a Medford. Although you get some differences too, I think there's some misconceptions about that. If you were looking at, for example, Salem, in fact, I think Phil Nygaard's neighborhood, the telephone wireline provider was late to the party here. The cable company got out first, and the viewpoint of the telephone company, at least initially, was we're not going to provide DSL, which is the wireline equivalent, because there's not enough market left for us. Well, that's changing. So it's a very, I don't want to say it's a confusing area, but I think it's a robust competitive area that things are happening and changing very quickly. The other thing that you should keep in mind is that the competitive mode is changing, where you used to have, since 96 at least, we've been looking at trying to get head-to-head competition between wireline providers. That may disappear because of some changes in federal rules, and what you may be looking at in the future is competition between really two sets of providers. And those two sets would be the wireline providers, which also a couple of them own 75% of the wireless companies too. So you may be going back to a consolidated Bell company kind of model, and the cable companies. That may be the platform of competition in the future. Different things, and that's one of the reasons why I say it's the technology in the marketplace is changing rapidly, and it's something that I think the legislature probably wants to take a look at and decide how your policies on competition need to be adapted, if at all. Maybe they're not needed at all, but I think you probably want to study that.
Just a follow-up. Yeah. I feel broadband is essential, whether it's communication between hospitals and community colleges, and we have to have it in our, some of us have to have it in even in our own personal homes. And so I think we need to be very careful that how we proceed in this arena.
If you've got young children, they find it absolutely essential.
Oh, yeah.
To be able to download music.
Just like this. You're right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your testimony. I have on the sign-up sheets, I have four individuals representing ORTCC, and I'm going to call those four, and if we maybe have two at a time or however you want to divvy up the testimony, we'll call them up next, and that's that looks like Link Shadley, Dr. Parker, Rob Myers, and Catherine Britton. So if we can have two at a time at the dais, and but come introduce yourself. If you can tell us what bill or bills you're speaking to, we'd appreciate that.
Good afternoon, Senator Starr, members of the committee. I'm Link Shadley. I'm vice chair of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. I live at 2437 East 10th Street in the Dalles. I want to speak to Senate Bill 13, and I have some written testimony to present on Senate Bill 14. A quick comment before either of those: in the last 20 minutes, it's become abundantly clear that our talking points need to be a little bit more clear and specific because there are some misconceptions. I don't believe we were asking the PUC for any additional regulatory authority, let alone regulation over what has been claimed as federal territory. We are wanting to give them authority to promote the use of broadband, and when they make decisions which are under their current regulatory authority, to kind of take into account, will this help deploy broadband? Will this help promote broadband? And that's all that bill is doing. On Senate Bill, and the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, we're made up of 10 regional consortiums, kind of grassroots folks that have been telecom advocates since it was telecom. The group of Indian tribes in the state of Oregon. We also have representatives from the counties and the cities on the group. So we pretty much represent, I guess, the non-industry user section of Oregon, both business and citizens. On Senate Bill 13, we simply want to give the PUC authority to gather some additional data so that we all know what we're talking about. A classic example, the Federal Communications Commission attempted to inventory where broadband was available several years ago. They decided if there was one broadband provider in a zip code, then everybody in that zip code must have broadband, so they included them in the census. That gave us a really, really skewed picture of who had broadband and who didn't in the U.S. I think we may hear from the phone companies that they're concerned about additional authority of the PUC or maybe divulging some sensitive marketing data. This does not require the phone companies to do anything. This doesn't require any additional burden on them that I see. It gives the PUC authority to collect that data, which may be through consumer surveys, certainly information that they have available to them now, but simply add broadband into that report that they will do either annually or biannually, which I think is a good idea. In addition to where broadband is, we're concerned about route diversity. We want to know that if the BIF occurs, Senator Deckert, you know what a BIF is, right? Backhoe-induced fiber failure.
On the tip of my tongue.
Or a forest fire in a cell tower, or whatever the reason is. Whatever delivery mechanism we have for telecommunications, we'd kind of like to know where there is route redundancy or diversity and where there is not. So when we have that cut, who's going to go dark? And especially from the standpoint of emergency communications, where might that line go dark, and what can we do to promote route diversity in some alternate paths? As we get into more kind of a terrorist mode, and I have a background almost in a former lifetime in security, so I'm very much aware of that, and spent a lot of years walking around looking over my left shoulder. I finally got tired of that and decided to take up a more positive occupation. But I am sensitive to that, and we need to keep that in mind. And where do we have route diversity, redundancy? Where don't we? And what can we do to promote that? That's simply what we're asking the PUC to help gather and report. Specifically on Senate Bill 14,
Yes. Yeah. Could I ask a question?
Yes, Senator.
Because PUC can do that with landline, would wireless and cable even have to provide that kind of data to them?
I don't believe they would have to. They would certainly be asked, and they would voluntarily could provide that data, or we simply get it the same way I get it, is dig out the websites and look at the coverage maps and figure out who covers where, talk to the local community. I'm always amazed when I get inquiries from a community saying, can the coordinating council help us get broadband because we're on the dark side of the digital divide? And I go looking at my maps and do a little bit of research, and I find, you know what? You know, DSL was deployed there a year and a half ago. And they say, oh, really? We didn't know about it. And they don't know if it's there or if it will reach them. So we have offered on several occasions to work with the telephone carriers, cable, wireless, anyone else that wants us to help us educate, promote broadband, both about its availability and then also about the application to encourage the take rate of that. And I always say, I don't care. The citizen gets interested in the internet because they want to talk to their grandkids, or they want to promote a small business, or they have a hobby of fixing old Mustangs, whether those be cars or old horses. I don't care. I just want to get them interested in the internet, and then that knowledge will spill over to other areas. So that's kind of where we're coming from. So on Senate Bill 14 on universal service, I think there are some misconceptions there also, and I will attempt to clear those up. And by the way, this is the first time I've ever actually written out testimony for a committee, so I don't know if I can stay with my script or not. Greetings. Presenting a case for common sense and what should obviously be good public policy can sometimes be a daunting task, especially in this building where special interests have a way of kind of tweaking common sense. So I'm just an old country boy, so please bear with me, and I'll see if I can make an opportunity here to present a common sense view of how we can apply public policy to aid all, and I emphasize all Oregonians, in the area of advanced telecommunications. Senate Bill 14 gives our PUC a tool to help bring broadband to rural and hard-to-serve citizens in Oregon. It is not mandatory. It relates to the state Universal Service Fund only. It has nothing to do with the federal USF. Senate Bill 14 adds broadband telecommunications to the program that helps bring connectivity to all Oregonians and allows for non-traditional carriers to opt into and to pay into and receive support from the State Universal Service Fund. And I'll emphasize, it allows for non-traditional carriers to opt in and pay into. If they don't opt in, they're not going to draw from it. They must opt in, pay into it, then they can draw from it for support. Hence, I anticipate some opposition from the traditional large telephone companies, although it seems most of the smaller rural telephone companies favor adding broadband to universal service. When I go searching, like at the Western Telecommunications Alliance, the National Telecommunications Cooperative Association, some of those organizations that represent more smaller rural folks. In the 1930s, AT&T Chairman Bain convinced Congress that a monopoly was the best way to provide telephone service to all Oregonians. The 1936 Telecom Act included the concept of universal service, a method of using profitable services to offset the high costs to reach rural Americans. In rural America, the multi-party operator-assisted line was subsidized. That evolved into a multi-party rotary dial line that was still subsidized. That evolved into a single-party line, then touchtone. Finally, a line that was capable of 56 kilobits of data per second. And that transmission was used to connect to the Internet, all of which was subsidized in a way by the Universal Service Fund. Now, we can split hairs and say, wait a minute, only the voice part of that is subsidized, which is true. But still, the phone line gets out to the ranch in French Glen, and they use that line to connect to the Internet now at 56K or some lower dial-in speed. So we are helping them get connected to the Internet. So I think the next evolution to connectivity is simply a line that's capable of higher data speeds called broadband, along with the traditional voice service. The next evolution, which we're already witnessing, includes a delivery of this service on something other than copper wires by cellular, wireless, cable, or satellite technology. We're also witnessing the steady erosion of simple voice lines and the corresponding erosion of funds from the State Universal Service Fund programs to provide voice service on copper wires. So when we have new technologies that are faster, better, cheaper, and can include voice, video, and data on a single connection, I think that's just the next logical step. It makes no sense to me whatsoever to exclude our rural Oregonians from advanced services that are enjoyed by our urban neighbors. Distance education, remote medical diagnostics, education, even treatment, news, agricultural assistance, telework, product marketing are just a few of the uses that increasingly require broadband connections to be useful. We must ensure that these are available to all Oregonians. As we see voice, video, and data converge into a single pipe provided by many different carriers, the contributions to our existing State Universal Service Fund are put in jeopardy. The Oregon PUC needs the tools to ensure the program continues and is current with the technology available to our urban counterparts. The Federal Universal Service Program seems to be mired in lobbying conflicts and court interpretations. Oregon has an effective representative in PUC Commissioner Ray Baum, who was recently appointed to the Federal-State Joint Board on Universal Service, and we can rely on him to have some positive influence at the federal level. At the state level, we do have control of our own State Universal Service Fund program. I urge you to join with other states in a common-sense approach by supporting Senate Bill 14 and ensure that all Oregonians enjoy the prosperity and social benefits of having reasonable and affordable broadband services available. Thank you. I'll answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Ms. Shadman? Yes, Senator Melissa Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think you'll have to help me with this. The concept here of the universal service funds, there was an issue that where AT&T went to court and they won. And information I've been received says that this bill would actually be thrown out in court if it ever went to court, just because of what's already happened in the courts. And I was just wondering if you can shed any light on that.
I'm not familiar with the AT&T situation. It may be Commissioner Beyer or Phil Nygaard can answer that more directly. I guess my gut response to that is that this is not mandatory. It gives the PUC authority to develop some program or some methodology for helping deploy broadband. And there are people over at the PUC building that are far more knowledgeable than I am on how to go about that and what the economics are and the legalities. And I trust that there's got to be some mechanism, some way for us at the state level to assist the deployment of broadband. I was born in Oregon, raised in Oregon. I remember from the time I first have memories, my folks on a farm having trouble with federal mandates and federal program controls and subsidies for milk and oats. And I think Oregonians have always been able to do a better job for themselves than somebody back in Washington, D.C. The Salem to Maupin split is bad enough, let alone, you know, Washington, D.C. to Maupin. So I would like to give them an additional tool, the authority, and hope that we can craft the administrative rules in such a way that's acceptable to all the parties and can put a tool in their toolbox that would be effective.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Myers. I live in Condon. Senate Bill 15 is compared to the rest of the bills, a relatively simple concept. That's why they let me have it. But I want to give you just a brief history. It's contained in the talking points. But 10 or 12, 14 years ago, there were very few people in the state of Oregon who really realized the potential that broadband held for not only professional but business usage as well. And I, in fact, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that one of those people is in the room today, and that's Ben Doty, who's Chief Executive Officer of NoNet Oregon. Many of us, including me, owe Ben a great debt. He's one of the most articulate advocates of broadband usage in the entire state and has been for several years. There weren't very many people, as I said, who had anything to really perspective with regard to where this was all headed. And most of us, and I'll use myself as an example, most of us began to realize the potential and the need, quite frankly, as it's developed for the available broadband in terms of applications and content that we were trying to develop at the time. From my personal experience, it had to do with the development of the Frontier Learning Network, which is a distance learning program that has been in existence since 1999. And we realized when we did this that we certainly needed a way to be able to provide connectivity so we would be able to export programming not only beyond our borders but also within the 4,000 square miles of the three counties that the Frontier Network serves proprietarily. So that's where we got started. And then as we began to recognize and develop those systems and understand the need that began to develop as a result of building these projects, we began to gather. And we gathered in groups, and then the groups became committees, and then the committees became consortia. And then we found out that we had 9 or 10 or 11 consortia around the state that were specific to telecommunications interests. And in addition to that, the tribes of Oregon were also needed to be at the table. And that was the origination of the concept for the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, so that we could, in fact, coordinate activities in the state of Oregon and avoid duplicative effort and resources and maximize the investment that the state of Oregon and private investors make in telecommunications. That's really how the ORTCC came about. And frankly, in my mind, and Senator Nelson alluded to this earlier, and I obviously agree with him, it's been a success story. We don't cost the state of Oregon anything. Everything we do is done at our own expense, frankly, I don't mind. It's one of those things that I think needs to be done. My community, my hometown, and the people in Eastern Oregon and Western Oregon, both urban and rural, benefit from our work. And we have no purpose other than to ensure that the business of telecommunications in the state of Oregon is approached from an equitable, efficient, cost-effective, and efficacious perspective. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Any questions for Mr. Meyer? Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony. I believe on the phone we have, and who's been listening to this hearing, we have Dr. Edwin Parker. Dr. Parker, are you available? Do you wish to provide some testimony to Senate Bill 16?
Yes, I do, and my apologies for not being able to be there in person with you.
Well, we appreciate the use of telephony technology here.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Please proceed. Introduce yourself and enter your testimony.
My name is Edwin Parker. I'm a telecommunications consultant living in Glen Eden Beach, Oregon, on the Oregon coast, and a member of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. to Senate Bill 16. I want to say I agree quickly with the minor of the federal law basically prohibits the Oregon PUC from regulating the broadband at the state level. I think under both federal and state law, the PUC has no authority to regulate or tax broadband. But this bill would not give any authority to regulate or tax broadband. I think if we have a goal of the state to have broadband services for all Oregonians in order to improve the economy, improve the quality of life, and reduce the economic gap between Oregon communities that have access to broadband digital applications and services and those that do not, which was established in Oregon law by the 2003 legislature and implemented in ORS 759016, which also lists some means to achieve that goal, including creating incentives, facilitating public-private planning, and removing barriers to public-private partnerships. You know, nowhere is regulation or taxing included in that suggested list of means. I think this bill explicitly gives the PUC responsibility to take the state broadband goal into account as it goes through its other functions. And I just wanted to suggest a couple of ways that the PUC could do that in ways that are not regulation. And one of them is addressed separately in Senate Bill 13, and that's namely gather appropriate data so that we know where we are in the state with respect to broadband. And just as an aside, I agree that we need some language clarification in 13 to make it clear that we should not order information from telephone companies that the PUC has no authority to order from wireless or cable companies. I think any information gathered should be voluntary or done through community or public surveys. We're just asking the telephone companies for broadband information would give a very biased and distorted picture of where we are in broadband. Another way that the PUC could promote broadband would be to look at the follow-up on the recent extended area service workshop that the PUC had. Now, that would be a way to protect the revenue needed by rural Oregon carriers to implement broadband services in their territories. So re-examining the intrastate inter-carrier compensation problems would help protect revenues that the rural telephone companies will need to implement broadband in their territories. But probably most importantly, the PUC could work with regulated carriers in an informal way to help create public-private partnerships to bridge the return on investment gap when the return on investment is insufficient for carriers to make the broadband investments on a purely commercial basis. It doesn't make any sense to require the carriers to do something that's not in their economic interest. On the other hand, when there's a public interest to get essential infrastructure, there ought to be a way to bridge that return on investment gap between what does make sense for the carriers and what's needed to make the investment. And so stimulating and facilitating public-private partnerships would be a much better way to achieve this goal than trying to reintroduce regulation, which is, I think, inappropriate. And that is my comments. I'll be pleased to answer questions if people have any.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Other questions for Mr. Parker? Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Next I have on the list is Catherine Britton. I also have Kim Hoffman. Is Kim?
Kim is injured and unable okay. to be here today. So
you're feeling that. Perfect.
Perfect.
Chairman Starr and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Catherine Britton. I am the legislative chair for the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. I am the director of Eastern Oregon Telecommunications Consortium, and I chair the Oregon Telehealth Alliance. So as I told your committee this morning, I'm up to my ears in telecommunications. However, telecommunications is not my passion. It's the means to my passion, which is healthcare. In supporting the package of bills that have come before you today, I see those as additional means to support my passion, which is healthcare. I also see it as a means to support economic development, education, and all of the other things that make our rural communities vibrant and contributing members of the state of Oregon. I specifically want to note that the council supports the Senate Bill 17 that was introduced by Senator Nelson and Commissioner Beyer, and we're willing to offer any kind of help that is needed for that process to happen. In batting cleanup for the council, one of the things that I want to stress is that while we don't always make decisions that please the telecommunications carriers, it has never been our intent to economically damage them in any way. And we are eager to work with them. They have two seats on the council table that are rarely filled, but we would like to encourage them to be at the table and to hopefully in future sessions not have to come to these hearings and have two approaches to or an oppositional approach to these bills, but something that we worked on together and it makes sense for all of us. So with that, I thank you. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Any questions for Ms. Clifton?
Just one.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've really enjoyed learning about telecommunications through your efforts. Other people also. But can you let us know where we are on the health committee, subcommittee of OTCC, Oregon Telecommunications?
Senator Starr, Senator Moss Anderson, I could pull a real dirty on Rob Myers and make him come up here and tell you that, but Rob chairs that committee. We are scheduled to provide a report to your committee on February 1st or soon thereafter, as you can take it. And we do have the subcommittee work completed. I think it's probably a real eye-opener for us to have done that work and find out that a lot of the issues that we encountered were matters of needing better communication between parties, doing some better planning, developing some policies that we can all live with, and not a real strong need for legislation. So we'll be eager to present that to you as soon as we get a chance to. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. I have, according to the list on the various bills, I'm going to read the individuals I have on the list to testify. And if your name isn't read and you wish to testify, jump up and down and let us know. We'll add you to the list. And I'm going to pull folks up in groups of two. What I have is six people. I have Brant Wolf, Shelley Jensen, David Polson, Eileen Benner, Chris Tamarin, and Bill Pinhollow. Those are the six individuals I have on the list to testify. So if someone else out there wants to testify, let's make yourself known as we proceed here. Let's have Brant Wolf and Shelley Jensen come, if you could come together. And just make sure that if on the bills that you're testifying on, that you make clear which ones you have issues with. It might be helpful, quite frankly, if you just go from top to bottom on the list and say if you have issue with a particular bill or not.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association. The OTA represents small, independent telephone companies that operate throughout the state of Oregon in rural areas, as well as larger companies that operate throughout Oregon in both rural and urban areas. Starting right at the beginning with Senate Bill 13, our objections basically to this bill are the inclusion of the language in regards to broadband services, the deployment usage of advanced broadband services. As you've heard before, the state PUC doesn't have any jurisdiction over these areas. This bill, as we read it, would indicate that telephone companies alone would have to participate in this report in regards to these matters. The PUC has no jurisdiction over cable modem or wireless services. And if a report was completed with this information, at best it would be only partially complete. If that language was removed from this bill and the sunset, and the report went ahead beyond the sunset was extended without that language, we would have a neutral position on the bill. So our opposition is not hard and fast to the bill itself, but just the inclusion of that language. Mr. Chair, do you want me to just move through them all? Okay.
Yes, please. Just
all right.
If you would.
Senate Bill 14, this bill would indicate that the Oregon Universal Service Fund would be expanded to include the subsidy of broadband services. As you may or may not know, the Universal Service Fund, it was contemplated to support and created to support the affordable, to make local dial tone affordable to all Oregonians. It was never contemplated that it would include any other service beyond that. I think that including broadband services would obviously create a burden on the fund, and the surcharge would have to increase. The surcharge on each Oregonian's telephone bill would have to increase just markedly to make up that shortfall. And if for no other reason alone, we would oppose it for that reason. There are other questions we have about the bill. For example, what exactly is broadband? How do you define that? I mean, my version of broadband might be vastly different from somebody else's version of broadband. And lastly, I mean, we all recognize the importance of high-speed internet access, and it's available to many, many Oregonians throughout the state, and many Oregonians choose not to take that service. Speaking solely on behalf of the small independent phone companies, most of them have broadband internet access available throughout their service territory, and the take rate or subscription rate is abysmal. It does not make up for the capital investment that they go through to deploy it. I think it's a wrong idea. It's a bad public policy to subsidize something that consumers have a choice over having. And that's it for 14. Senate Bill 15, extending the sunset of the ORTCC. The OTA is opposed to extending the sunset of the ORTCC. The industry and others obviously recognize the importance of broadband services. There's just no doubt about that. It's only going to become more important as we go on. There are two different philosophies about how to do this. One is to let the market drive this service and let people decide, and through competition everything will work out the way it's supposed to work out. And the other philosophy is to have some level of government subsidy or intervention or regulation, and that's just something we're opposed to. The fact that I'm here testifying before this committee in opposition to several of these bills kind of speaks to that. And if Senate Bill 17 passes, which we support at the moment, if that passes, certainly we would not support the continuing of the ORTCC and Senate Bill 17, that task force created out of that. So,
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I agree with you, Mr. Wolf, regarding competition should run the process. My concern is there are people in the state of Oregon where it really is more expensive for the independent telephone companies cable, et cetera, to access, to deliver access to broadband. And those are the people that I really would like to support in this process. And it sure would be nice if we could come up with some kind of language or some kind, some ideas or some concepts where we can really help rural Oregon and even those that aren't far from the hubs of, I mean, I have Verizon DSL. I mean, it's an absolute necessity. But there are also people outside of our area that will really need it also. So, and I know it's going to be more expensive, but that's why I think the OTCC is important, because they are the voice that keeps, you know, saying, hey, we're here, we got to have it, and coordinate. So that's the type of, you know, that's why we need your input. To keep us well grounded, saying, listen, we can't afford it, but maybe what else can we do? I mean, that's why we need you at the table. I don't know if you want to comment on that or not, but.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Senate Bill 16, quite frankly, just confuses me. I'm not sure exactly what the goal is here. My only response to this is just looking strictly at the introductory statement there, if it means to indicate some kind of regulatory oversight over broadband services, we would just be opposed to that for reasons we've heard both from the commission and also just personally, we're just opposed to it. Senate Bill 17, which creates the task force, the Durham Task Force, we would support that, and hopefully we would be a part of that conversation and maybe get at some of these issues in a more structured way. That's the end of my testimony on these bills. I'd be happy to answer any questions at all.
Any additional questions for Brent? Yes, Senator Deckard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Woods, you are a member of this council.
That's correct.
You are. I guess, I mean, in some ways I'm following up on Senator Montes Anderson's comment, but would really appreciate some sort of response. The whole question of deployment of services to whether it's low-income areas and urban or it's the end of the line in rural, to me, is an important question facing our society. And it would be, I guess I would implore the industry, and I know we have several representatives that are going to be up here, starting with Ms. Jensen in a moment. But as we look at the broad range of issues, and we had a bill in revenue today, and I think we'll have other ones around the taxation that's occurring in municipalities all across Oregon that I'm concerned about. But as I think industry, on the one hand, that it has that concern, on the other should understand and maybe come up with ideas on how, if this is not the correct way, and I would probably agree that there are some issues with the bills that we have before us, but if that's not the correct route, what options do we see out there, and what solutions do we see? And we're at the start of session, so it's not even February yet, but as we proceed to June, I think we should be looking for solutions on both ends of the of those two questions. And so I guess my question or concern I would put to you, Mr. Wolf, is just, if not today, I would hope in the coming months that that's where your eyes might be.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Deckard, I appreciate those comments, and I have a couple of responses. Number one, first and foremost, is every day the companies that I work for and represent are out there digging the ditches and providing the service and getting it to people in places in Oregon that you'd probably be surprised that you can get high-speed internet access, towns like Helix and Halfway and smaller towns than that, if you can believe it. So that's kind of my first response. And secondly, in getting back to the ORTCC, I guess kind of in my own defense, I am on that committee, and I have been for 4 years. And for the first at least two full years, I went diligently. Well, maybe not diligently, but I did go. And the records would reflect that, I think, if you cared to look at it. And despite that fact, I mean, we still have some bills here that we're opposed to. So that's a legitimate point. I did stop going about a year ago. So that's kind of my response to that. And hopefully, finally, just to follow up, I would hope that if Senate Bill 17 is passed into law and we have this task force, we could get at some of these issues, because there are big issues to talk about. There's no doubt about it. And we're happy to be there. I mean, they affect us every single day in the job that we do. And we'd be happy to be at the table to try and work some of these issues out. But in my mind, expanding the universal service fund to include broadband is not the answer at all. And I can't testify to what the answer is, but I will tell you that we are certainly interested. No one's more interested than we are. So I appreciate your comments. I really do.
Ms. Jensen.
Chairman Starr, committee members, I'm Shelley Jensen, the Regulatory and Governmental Affairs Manager for Verizon. And I'm only going to talk about four of the bills. The first one is Senate Bill 13. And I think we have the same concerns with the report that a lot of other folks have already expressed, mainly being that if the report is done by the PUC and they survey the companies that they regulate, one, there's going to be a skewed result because they don't regulate cable or wireless, and two, they're asking for a lot of information that I think most companies would consider proprietary. For example, talking about where we're planning to deploy broadband. Well, quite honestly, Verizon doesn't want Comcast to know where we plan to deploy it in the future, because that will give them an opportunity to get there first, and vice versa. I'm sure Comcast would have the same take on that. So that's of concern to us. Also, the information about the route redundancy can also be not only proprietary, but can also be a security issue, in terms of we've become much more sensitive since 9/11 over what kind of information we give out about where our network is and what it serves and that kind of thing. So that would be another concern we would have about making any of that kind of information public. And for the most part, once you give it to the PUC and the PUC gives it to the legislature, it is public information. So that's kind of our take on Senate Bill 13.
If that one section of the bill was removed and you were just basically extending the sunset, would you have changed your position?
We don't have any objection to the report continuing. Ironically, it was our bill in 99 that established the report, so the report's fine.
Okay.
Senate Bill 14, again, we have a lot of the same concerns that have already been expressed. I think the main one is, as the PUC indicated, broadband is considered an interstate service. And when the PUC first established the Oregon Universal Service Fund, they actually attempted to put the surcharge on interstate and intrastate services. And AT&T did challenge that, and the courts ultimately said that it could only be placed on intrastate service, that the federal taxes on interstate service. So my question is, even if the bill were to pass, I'm not quite sure how. The only thing they could do would be to increase the surcharge on the intrastate services and then somehow use it to subsidize interstate. And I'm not sure that's what this group really wants to do. The existing surcharge is already 6% on folks, so that would probably be guaranteed to increase the surcharge quite a bit. And again, you run into the same problem with broadband being provided by at least three different types of technologies, and how would you place the surcharge on folks who had intrastate service but then distribute it possibly even to companies whose subscribers didn't pay into the fund because they weren't a regulated telephone company. So that's another kind of hurdle that solution has. That's pretty much it for that bill. And then Senate Bill 16, we're equally confused about what the intent of this is. But the concern that we have, again, is broadband isn't subject to the PUC's regulation. And then just the way it says that they should implement the provisions of ORS Chapter 759, that's the chapter that regulates telephone companies in a manner consistent with broadband. at least promotes the inference that they should use their regulatory authority over telephone companies to promote broadband. And so that, again, kind of sets up an unlevel playing field for DSL versus cable modem or wireless broadband, because neither of those, neither cable nor wireless, comes under Section 759. So at a minimum, we need more clarity in what's really intended by that bill. And then just a final comment on Senate Bill 17. We think that's probably a good idea to set up a task force, because as Chairman Beyer indicated, there's a lot of change going on at the federal level at this point, and it probably would be a good idea to get the Oregon statutes in sync with what's going on at the federal level.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ms. Jensen? I've got a question. There's two on the coordinating council. There are two seats for telecom, apparently. And Brant, you had one of those. Who sat in the other chair?
Well, it went vacant for I think a couple of years, and then Mr. Shadley behind me here assumed one of those. I'm not a year or two ago. I couldn't say exactly when, but
okay. Thank you. Next, let's have Eileen Benner and David Paulson, please.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Paulson, Governmental Affairs Manager for Sprint out of Hood River. I like to think of Sprint as the headquarters being Hood River. Some people think there's one in Kansas, but we don't recognize that. So it's hard for me to say much more than my colleagues have already expressed so eloquently, but I did want the record to reflect that I, too, attended an ORTCC meeting one time. So, you know, hopefully the minutes reflected that as well. And also, but I did want to speak about Senate Bill 14, and that is the Universal Service Fund issue. You've heard the arguments about why that's not a good idea. I think there are some alternatives to answer some of the questions that were asked. There are other things that can be done besides a surcharge and a subsidy. I think Senate Bill 11 is a good start in that process of encouraging broadband deployment. And I also think there are other ways to look at that. I know there are other states that have put funds together with private money, with government money, with grant money, where companies who want to deploy broadband can go in and apply and withdraw and cover up to 50% of the cost of serving rural areas that would have probably never see it if that fund had not been available. So I think incentives are much more important than looking at a subsidy, and I would encourage us to go down the road of looking at the ways to incent that to happen rather than try to subsidize it through additional surcharges and fees and taxes on subscribers' bills.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. I've been wanting to hear someone say maybe another alternative. And so you're, how is this done then? What other states have done this?
Chair Starr, Senator Montes Anderson, I don't have all the details, but I can tell you that in North Carolina, for example, there was a fund put together partly by the state, by private industry, with government grants, that companies, both telcos and other independent companies, not just telephone companies, but people who provide broadband service, can go and withdraw from the fund. In fact, Sprint was the first telco to actually apply to this fund and get money to help deploy broadband, and we rolled out DSL in communities that would probably never see it because a business case couldn't be made to make it profitable for us to do it without some kind of help. And so that worked very well. And so some very rural areas in North Carolina are now served by DSL, where Sprint went in and deployed it. And the take rate was just amazing for these folks. We were just astounded at how many folks took the DSL service once it was deployed there.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, on his PDA. Okay.
So would this be would this be considered an economic development type activity? I mean, you know, economic development is extremely important, and there is going to be, I'm sure, some line item budget, funds in that. Is that when you're saying we don't have much money, but if this is going to help rural Oregon, you know, this might be something that we would consider, at least in the Ways and Means process. I don't know. Comments?
Chair Starr, Senator Montes Anderson. That certainly would be a way to help economic development. I don't know that you can look statistically and make a link, but it certainly would be ways to help small businesses and mid-sized businesses go to areas maybe where their labor force would be there in an affordable rate but couldn't afford to do it because there was no infrastructure available to provide those kind of services. So in that regard, I would say yes. That would be a good way to do it. And I think to the extent that the state has funds that can look at something like that, that would be a good banner to put that under. Certainly, it certainly is needed, and you know, we certainly support that. So.
Great. Any further questions? Any further
testimony,
Mr. Paulson?
I have a stack of six bills here or whatever, but I think my colleagues have already expressed it well. At least I can tell my mother I testified today, so.
And if you have written testimony like you know, like provide, we can put it, insert it into our bill files. Please.
Good afternoon, Chairman Starr, members of the committee. My name is Eileen Venner. I represent Time Warner Telecom. And actually, on the sign-up sheet, I thought I checked the category that said no testimony. But since you've mentioned my name, I can't resist the opportunity to come up and just put a face to the committee that isn't often heard from. And I also agree with the testimony that's been given by all the industry members, so I don't have much to add to that. But I would like to just let you know that the competitive carriers are a presence in Oregon. And I think we've heard some gloomy scenarios put forth even by Commissioner Beyer as to the way competition might go or the availability of alternative providers in the future. But there are many competitors in Oregon, and I think the main message that I would like to give to this committee from those competitors is that they are here because they see a market niche or a market need in certain areas. And they have very unique ways and very stingily financed ways of meeting those needs. And the main message that they would like you to hear is that the less regulation and the less reporting and the fewer taxes, surcharges, subsidies that they have to deal with, the more effective they will be in coming out and providing service to the communities in Oregon. First, they have to establish an idea and then the capital to finance that idea and then get into a market and build up the revenues to proceed from there. And yes, they will be coming to cities where there is a good market base first, but if they can succeed there, they will be coming out into the rural communities. And I think you've seen small companies, especially in Bend and Redmond and southern Idaho, or Oregon, that are doing well and serving a need. And so specifically on these bills, for instance, Senate Bill 13, which requires more reporting or covers the report that the PUC already makes on broadband, it's difficult for competitive carriers to have the administrative forces to make those kind of reports. And they don't keep their records in the way that the traditional LECs have kept their records. And therefore, when the commission asks a question, they don't fit into the slots, and so it becomes an ordeal just to make these kind of reports. And yes, we have all the competitive concerns that the other industry members have mentioned. So if anything, we'd like to see less reporting rather than more. And I would ask you to consider what the reports that the PUC has put together now have done to further deployment of broadband and services in Oregon. On Senate Bill 14, we are extremely concerned about doing anything that will increase the surcharge that our customers have to pay to finance the Universal Service Fund. As it's been that's already at nearly 6% of the revenue that a customer generates is paid into this universal service fund. And who's going to get that money, and how is it going to enable one carrier to compete versus another is a question that should be answered before you expand that fund. Let me skip over 15 for the moment. And on Senate Bill 16, you've heard a lot of reasons why it would be difficult for the PUC to do anything more to promote broadband. And frankly, other than administering the laws that are on the books now to make competition able to compete fairly, I think the PUC and the state should be looking to the private industry to expand broadband and services, not looking to force it through a regulatory fiat. The competitive industry, I think, would agree that there does need to be a legislative and larger community take a look at all of the laws on the books now and ways to update Oregon's statutes. But definitely, I believe that there should be representatives from the industry, both the competitive industry and the incumbent industry, as well as PUC members. And just to get back to Senate Bill 15, we have a regulatory commission and we have a legislature to set goals. And I think that those are the places where the emphasis should occur. It's wonderful to have regions saying, please come service, but again, the best thing you can do to encourage that service to come there is to allow companies to make their plans, implement them with the least amount of regulation and the least amount of taxation and the freest hand possible, and to not ask them to expend resources on administrative and other efforts that really don't allow them to get out there and do their work. And that's all I have to say. Thank you for the opportunity.
Senator Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If it's fair for me to ask a yes-no question, should wireless be treated exactly the same as CLECs and ILECs? And I know you don't represent ILECs incumbents, but I guess speaking for CLECs.
Well, speaking on behalf of CLECs, we would like to see any type of non-incumbent carrier be able to compete freely. And on the other hand, we would like to see all carriers treated equitably. And there are appropriate places where I think wireless carriers could be included, such as in making payments into the Universal Service Fund, because they have customers who use the telecommunications facilities that the USF pays for, just as competitive and ILEC carriers do. But I don't mean to cast a net that we don't want to be caught in on anyone else who's successfully avoided it this far. And I want to get out of the room alive, too. But
from this table.
Does Sprint have a position on that?
Is this a yes or no question?
Yeah, that's what I'm really hoping for. I mean, perhaps you don't have a position.
Chair Starr, Senator Decker, I do have a point of clarification. And today, the wireless carriers can participate in the Universal Service Fund in Oregon if they choose to and apply for certification, and they will contribute at that point. So I think you have to look at the services and technology and how it's being regulated or needs to be not regulated to make it expand and grow. And I think that varies by the type used. That's a yes or no.
That's where's our lawyers to discern that?
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you both very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Last two I have on the list to testify are Chris Tamarin and Bill Penhollow. Again, if there's someone else in the room that wishes to testify, okay, I'll add Anna to the list. Thank you.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Christopher Tamron with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, and appreciate the opportunity to be here today on behalf of the department to support Senate Bill 15 to extend the life of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. I provided written copies of my testimony to the committee. This council was created by the 2001 Oregon Legislature to study alternative approaches to providing coordinated statewide, regional, and local telecommunication services, including providing services to unserved and underserved areas of the state, and to study the manner in which the telecommunication investments can be coordinated to facilitate partnerships between the public sector and the private sector and between state and local governments. As has been noted, the council is unfunded and its members volunteer their time because they believe telecommunications issues are critical to their communities and to the state. The Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council has been very active over the past 3 years, providing a forum for debate between communities, between providers and customers, and contributing directly to the establishment of broadband telecommunications policies in Oregon. Regarding broadband policy, it's now in Oregon statute that it is the goal of this state to promote access to broadband services for all Oregonians in order to improve the economy in Oregon, improve the quality of life in Oregon communities, and reduce the economic gap between Oregon communities that have access to broadband digital applications and services and those that who do not. That came from a bill introduced by the ORTCC in 2003 as House Bill 2577. Regarding public safety, it is now in Oregon statutes that it is the policy of the state of Oregon to encourage and support the rapid deployment of broadband telecommunication services in areas of the state where such services do not exist, to support redundancy of critical telecommunications assets in order to ensure homeland security protections in the state and ensure a secure conduit is available for emergency communications and public safety networks in all Oregon communities. That's Oregon law today because it was introduced by the ORTCC in 2003 as HB 2304. Regarding telemedicine, House Joint Resolution 4 in the last session established a state position encouraging and supporting telemedicine reimbursement. Be it resolved by the Legislative Assembly of the State of Oregon that we, the members of the 72nd Legislative Assembly, encourage and support the following policies for telemedicine reimbursement in the state of Oregon. Medical providers who are reimbursed for services provided in person should be reimbursed for the same services when provided via telecommunications, and there's a lot of other definitions that I won't provide at this time. But again, now we have a statement of a policy represented by the state because of legislative concepts and ideas, policy ideas developed by and submitted by and pursued by the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. In addition, the Council submitted multiple reports and legislative concepts to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, and we'll be delivering a report to the legislature this session with recommendations for healthcare, education, and distance learning. I invite the committee to visit the Council's website at www.ortcc.org to see the significant output of this group and appreciate the time and effort of the members of the Council have contributed to date. SB 15 extends the life of the Council from January 2nd, 2006 to January 2nd, 2010 and allows the Council members to be reimbursed for expenses if funds become available. Current law prohibits any compensation or reimbursement of expenses from any source for Council members. The Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council has been an asset and a contributor to the state, and the state will benefit from its continued existence. Thank you.
Mr. Tamron, what exactly is your role with the council? Are you staff?
I am with the, again, Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. We have provided some staff support to the council on a best effort basis and have found the council to be a partner in seeking to facilitate the deployment and utilization of telecommunications infrastructure and creating related economic opportunities throughout the state and building quality communities throughout the state.
Wouldn't you see that this effort would be maybe more positive, I don't know if that's the right word, but if the private industry was more connected to the work of the council, it seems to me that there's this, even the fact that you've got members on the council, or seats at least, there clearly is not the kind of cooperation that you would hope, or at least I would hope as a legislator, between the council and the providers of this service.
Chair Starr, I agree with you fully. I think more industry involvement would be very desirable in debating issues that the council discusses. But I will also note that over the past several years, industry has, both through membership and also by invitation, and has attended and made presentations to the council dealing with technology and with regulation and other issues. But I believe you're absolutely correct. More direct industry participation in the council is desirable, and I think members of the council would like to see that.
Great, thanks. Another question? Mr. Pinhall.
Mr. Chair, committee member, and committee administrator, for the record, my name is Bill Pinhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. I have written testimony for you today. All of my points have been covered by previous witnesses, so I won't belabor you with that. I would like to add, though, just a bit to what Mr. Tamron indicated about the work of the council and what Senator Nelson made reference to, that this is a volunteer council that has worked diligently over the past 4 years in developing concepts and ideas and legislation on the deployment of broadband across this state to provide all of our communities, even our rural communities, opportunity to access the benefits of broadband technology. The report that Mr. Tamron referred to that's on the internet is a very impressive report that they have put together. They submitted it to the Joint Interim Committee on Information Management and Technology, along with these bills that were introduced. There's a lot of very positive information there. I'm somewhat frustrated too by the fact that we have failed in involving the industry as we had originally intended from the very beginning in 2001 when this legislation was passed. It was our concept, and the counties introduced this as priority legislation in 2001. It was our idea of trying to bring the industry together, particularly with local government and our consortiums around the state, to try to find some solutions on how to deal with this problem. It was developing, broadband access was developing quite well in most of our urban areas, except for, as has been pointed out, the low-income area. But it wasn't getting out into our rural communities, out as Ms. Britton will talk to you about in Wallowa County or some other points of the state. So we would encourage this committee and the legislature to look at these bills seriously. We are supportive of 13, 15, 16, and 17. We looked at Senate Bill 14. Our legislative committee had some additional questions and ask for additional information. We'll be reviewing that again in February, and we'll be taking a position on that bill at that time. But all of these measures and the measure that was heard this morning in Senate Revenue, I think, are ideas on how we can advance broadband technology in the state of Oregon for the benefit of Oregonians statewide to help us remain economically competitive both nationally and internationally. And I think we need to address these issues and see if there's a way we can get industry and the council together and identify ways. And I appreciate your comments this afternoon, Mr. Chair, of saying, give us some options, give us some ideas. We'll have some time. Let's see what we can do with these measures. We would encourage the committee to give favorable consideration to these bills and send them on to the Senate.
Thank you. Question? Thank you very much.
Thank
for your
you.
Testimony. Appreciate it. Ano? Again, is there anyone else that that wishes to testify on these sets of bills this afternoon? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Ano Husing. I'm the director of the Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association, a nonprofit that works for cities, counties, ports, soil and water conservation districts, and the Coquel Indian Tribe on the Oregon coast. And I am a new, relatively new member of the ORTCC. I guess we're still, I'm not sure if the name rural is still in there or not. We're going through a transition in a name, but I'm frustrated that the private sector hasn't been more involved in the deliberations, but I'm very impressed at the kind of volunteer effort and the quality of the dialogue that goes on at these meetings. And I benefit greatly by participating in them. And I'm in favor of all the bills and at least a continued discussion about them, but I would like to just share one quick story or anecdote that I think is germane to the discussion. We're doing an effort on the Oregon coast to advance the deployments and usage of telecommunications. So I'm participating with the City of Florence right now, and they have a telecom group that's met several years ago, and it wasn't folks from the private sector, with a couple of retirees that had been in the private sector of telecommunications, but it was basically the public sector types getting together talking about how to make Florence have the state-of-the-art kind of broadband in their community. And they met for a year or two, and they developed a report. They sent it on to the city council. Then there were some changes in city government, and they didn't act upon it. So in our group, which has a large network of individuals up and down the Oregon coast, which, by the way, works with the private sector very closely on a number of other industry issues. So we're no stranger to the private sector and a lot of other matters on the Oregon coast. But when I said to them, why don't we get that committee going again and pick up where you left off, the first thing I did when I contacted that committee was we got the local ISPs in the town together, and we set the word out to private sector people that we want you at the table. You know, come to Florence if you have any interest in doing work in Florence. Come join us, and let's see what we can do collaboratively. And we've had three or four meetings, and I don't want to sound like I'm beating my own drum here too much, but a number of the people that were on that previous committee said, wow, you know, this has got such a different look and feel to it, the committee now. And why? Because we had private sector people at the table, and they were making outstanding contributions. And I think the private sector was there because some of them smelled that there were profits to be made by working collaboratively with us to boost take rates up and to have state-of-the-art services so everybody in town is using it. That's the future. And when I hear an individual coming forward here and just basically saying, don't even have this group meet again, meaning the ORTCC, I say, God, you know, that's going backwards in our thinking. You know, we have so much to accomplish together if we work together. So we can argue the nuances of these bills and what it does, but you know, I extend my hand to my friends in the private sector. I have tremendous respect for what they do. It's a complicated business, cutthroat as the you-know-what. I've been involved with fishing industry matters and everything. I don't think anything rivals what goes on in the telecommunications industry. So I'm very impressed at what they have to do. We just want to help them move toward profitability. We have so much to do together collaboratively, and the less time we spend fighting and the more time we spend working together, they're going to make more money. Our people are going to have a higher standard of living. This is too important to leave exclusively to the private sector, and I thank you for indulging me in making those remarks. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions, Fernanda? Thank you. Appreciate your testimony this afternoon. With that, it ends our list of folks that have signed up and have indicated their interest in testimony and testifying this afternoon. We don't have any other bills on our agenda today, so I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17. And I expect, frankly, though, that these issues will continue to have some discussion. I encourage everyone, really, to work with the members of this committee as we progress and move forward. So, and I know that Senator Metzger will want to review the testimony that was given today, and he and I will have a conversation, and I expect many of us will. So thank you for your participation this afternoon. And this committee is adjourned.